escuelas oficiales de idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias, pruebas de certificación de nivel intermedio B2 de inglés, convocatoria ordinaria de 2023, prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de tres tareas. Escuchará cada grabación dos veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícela según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. Atención, no escriba en los recuadros sombreados. Son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to 6 short messages from a radio station. Match the messages, 1 to 6, to the most suitable phrase, A to J. Write your answers in the table provided. There are 3 extra phrases you do not need. Message 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute to read the phrases. Message 0. Example.
For more Life Kit, check out our other episodes. I hosted one on how to be an active bystander, and there's another one on how to rethink laziness. You can find those plus tons of other episodes at npr.org/lifekit. And if you love Life Kit and want more, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/lifekitnewsletter.
Message 1.
Need some help with holiday shopping? For more than 45 years, Dooney & Burke has made the holidays memorable with high-quality handbags and accessories for every lifestyle. The Dooney & Burke Gift Guide takes the guesswork out of your shopping list. Browse the top-rated bags and accessories guaranteed to make your loved one smile. To see the personalized gift guide, visit dooney.com/lifekit.
Message 2.
Ready for a new ride, but not sure where to start? Try the tool designed to make car shopping and financing easier. With Capital One Auto Navigator, you can find a car and get pre-qualified instantly. Then see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. It's so simple, you might feel like you're taking the easy way out. That's because you are. Capital One. What's in your wallet? Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator.
Message 3.
Are you dreaming of a family vacation, like a holiday get-together or a beach getaway? With Vrbo, you can book a vacation home with room for everyone so your family can be together again. Download the Vrbo app. That's V-R-B-O.
Message 4.
Find the perfect gift for the NPR fans on your list by visiting shop.npr.org. It's easy to browse our selection of t-shirts, hats, and more to find the right thing. And don't forget to grab a few fun things for yourself while you're there. That's shop.npr.org.
Message 5.
On NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, we talk about what we're watching, listening to, or just trying to figure out. Like what concert films you should watch if you miss live music, and great books to read alone or in your book club. All of that in around 20 minutes every weekday. Listen now to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Message 6.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/lifekit.
Listen again. Message 0. Example.
For more Life Kit, check out our other episodes. I hosted one on how to be an active bystander, and there's another one on how to rethink laziness. You can find those plus tons of other episodes at npr.org/lifekit. And if you love Life Kit and want more, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/lifekitnewsletter.
Message 1.
Need some help with holiday shopping? For more than 45 years, Dooney & Burke has made the holidays memorable with high-quality handbags and accessories for every lifestyle. The Dooney & Burke gift guide takes the guesswork out of your shopping list. Browse the top-rated bags and accessories guaranteed to make your loved one smile. To see the personalized gift guide, visit dooney.com/lifekit.
Message 2.
Ready for a new ride, but not sure where to start? Try the tool designed to make car shopping and financing easier. With Capital One Auto Navigator, you can find a car and get pre-qualified instantly. Then see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. It's so simple, you might feel like you're taking the easy way out. That's because you are. Capital One. What's in your wallet? Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator.
Message 3.
Are you dreaming of a family vacation, like a holiday get-together or a beach getaway? With Vrbo, you can book a vacation home with room for everyone so your family can be together again. Download the Vrbo app. That's V-R-B-O.
Message 4.
Find the perfect gift for the NPR fans on your list by visiting shop.npr.org. It's easy to browse our selection of t-shirts, hats, and more to find the right thing. And don't forget to grab a few fun things for yourself while you're there. That's shop.npr.org.
Message 5.
On NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, we talk about what we're watching, listening to, or just trying to figure out. Like what concert films you should watch if you miss live music, and great books to read alone or in your book club. All of that in around 20 minutes every weekday. Listen now to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Message 6.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/lifekit.
This is the end of task one. Now turn to task two. Task 2. Listen to a talk about private schools in Britain. Complete the sentences 1 to 8 with no more than 3 words according to what the speaker says. Write your answers in the table provided. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the sentences.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was educated for 10 years at one of the best private schools in the country. A prefect, a scholar, a prize winner, and although I'm beyond grateful for having received the education I did, tonight I stand here to argue that private schools are failing our country. They are the root of inequality in Britain. They're bad for young people and for our nation. They're not just bad for society, but also for the children and the families who use them. Despite the undoubted benefits my education gave me, it deprived me of the richness and diversity of British society. The academic evidence tells us it was a waste of money. That's because children who go to private schools usually have lots of advantages already. Money, books, successful parents. As long as children feel academically supported, they would have done well anyway. My best friend at university came from a modest background, but he had very supportive parents and was a very diligent student. Despite being awarded an academic scholarship to study at a private school, he decided to remain in the state sector and he ended up at Cambridge. My partner, on the other hand, did switch to the private system. Although she benefited in terms of establishing connections and being selected for an exchange programme she might not have taken part in if she'd never attended a private school, the academic environment changed her and it seemed to have a toxic influence on her self-esteem. I don't want that for my child. Furthermore, in my school, teachers used a very strict approach. I was never disrespectful. I did misbehave once, though, and I got lines to write as a punishment, but I didn't realise fully what they taught me until years later. But was that discipline worth it? Privately educated kids do far better than children who went to state schools, but most of that effect disappears as soon as you take into account the background of the children. One study says that private schools help children do just half a grade better in their GCSEs than if they'd gone to a different school. The difference at GCSE between private and state school children is explained by factors other than the type of school they went to. When children of all backgrounds and abilities learn together, their learning is better. We all know that children do better when there are bright children in the room, and all schools do well when there are pushy parents at the school gates. My best friend, as I said, is a prime example. He got into Cambridge and graduated with first-class honours in medicine. I can tell you, I will not be sending my 10-year-old to a private school next year. With the £20,000 a year I'll save, we'll buy an awful lot of after-school clubs and half-term holidays. It might even pay for her university fees. Britain's diversity will enrich my daughter's life, and she'll benefit from the ability to mix with children from every background. Finland abolished its private schools in the 1970s to close the attainment gap between the richest and poorest students. It also turned Finland into one of the global education success stories that we envy. In our country, isn't it time to do something big and attack the inequalities and division in our class system that's produced and reproduced by private schools?
Listen again.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was educated for 10 years at one of the best private schools in the country. A prefect, a scholar, a prize winner, and although I'm beyond grateful for having received the education I did, tonight I stand here to argue that private schools are failing our country. They are the root of inequality in Britain. They're bad for young people and for our nation. They're not just bad for society, but also for the children and the families who use them. Despite the undoubted benefits my education gave me, it deprived me of the richness and diversity of British society. The academic evidence tells us it was a waste of money. That's because children who go to private schools usually have lots of advantages already. Money, books, successful parents. As long as children feel academically supported, they would have done well anyway. My best friend at university came from a modest background, but he had very supportive parents and was a very diligent student. Despite being awarded an academic scholarship to study at a private school, he decided to remain in the state sector and he ended up at Cambridge. My partner, on the other hand, did switch to the private system. Although she benefited in terms of establishing connections and being selected for an exchange programme she might not have taken part in if she'd never attended a private school, the academic environment changed her, and it seemed to have a toxic influence on her self-esteem. I don't want that for my child. Furthermore, in my school, teachers used a very strict approach. I was never disrespectful. I did misbehave once, though, and I got lines to write as a punishment, but I didn't realise fully what they taught me until years later. But was that discipline worth it? Privately educated kids do far better than children who went to state schools, but most of that effect disappears as soon as you take into account the background of the children. One study says that private schools help children do just half a grade better in their GCSEs than if they'd gone to a different school. The difference at GCSE between private and state school children is explained by factors other than the type of school they went to. When children of all backgrounds and abilities learn together, their learning is better. We all know that children do better when there are bright children in the room, and all schools do well when there are pushy parents at the school gates. My best friend, as I said, is a prime example. He got into Cambridge and graduated with first-class honours in medicine. I can tell you, I will not be sending my 10-year-old to a private school next year. With the £20,000 a year I'll save, we'll buy an awful lot of after-school clubs and half-term holidays. It might even pay for her university fees. Britain's diversity will enrich my daughter's life, and she'll benefit from the ability to mix with children from every background. Finland abolished its private schools in the 1970s to close the attainment gap between the richest and poorest students. It also turned Finland into one of the global education success stories that we envy. In our country, isn't it time to do something big and attack the inequalities and division in our class system that's produced and reproduced by private schools?
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Task 3. Listen to an extract from an interview with Mose Bushell, a reporter, about what to do when there are floods when driving. Decide if the sentences 1 to 11 are true or false according to the interview. Write your answers, true or false, in the table provided. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the sentences.
So we know climate change is causing an increase in extreme weather events. How is climate change impacting flooding specifically?
We're getting more rainfall in shorter amounts of time, more dramatic rain events coming down. It's not that we're getting necessarily more rain through the year. It's that it's happening in a more compressed amount of time. And what that means is flooding. You talk to the experts and they say when you combine that with other trends like suburban sprawl, maybe kind of poorly planned development and other things that can come and interfere with the way water flows on land, well, then you really have a recipe for more extreme flooding that we're seeing now and that we kind of expect into the future.
So you kind of touched on this in your last answer, but with some of the urban development, what other things make an area prone to flash floods?
Anything that you do to put down impervious cover will affect the way water flows on land. And impervious cover is kind of a technical term for asphalt, anything hard that does not absorb water. The second you do that, it could be a rooftop, it could be a parking lot. What you're doing is changing the natural flows of water as it goes over land. Typically, you know, water is going to go downhill and find a path of least resistance into a creek or stream and make its way out to the ocean. When you start putting in impervious cover, it starts messing with that. And suddenly you have more water sitting on land, and that can allow water to build up, and then you got a flood.
Got it. All right, so let's move into the actionable stuff now. You reported that the majority of flood deaths happen to people while they're in their vehicle, so our conversation is going to be focused on that scenario.
Yeah.
I'm from Texas, grew up in Houston, and on our highways, I would see all the time, and those programmable like LED road signs, the phrase, turn around, don't drown. It's pithy. It's easy to remember. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Turn around, don't drown is definitely like, you know, it's something you hear in other parts of the country, but maybe not as much as you hear it here. And in fact, it did start in Texas. It was the kind of brainchild of a guy named Hector Guerrero, who's used to be a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, he grew up in Central Texas and, you know, the place they call Flash Flood Alley. And he just really thought that there should be a good way to communicate this concept. And so there you have it. Turn around, don't drown. The idea is that even if you see a little bit of water on the road, it might become dangerous. And it's just a much better policy to avoid it as long as you can, rather than try to risk it and go through.
Yeah.
One of my aunts is actually an insurance agent, and one Christmas she gave me an emergency tool to keep in the car, and it has like a seatbelt cutter, a window smasher, a whistle. I think there might even be like a weak flashlight on it too.
Yeah.
So what kinds of things should people keep in their car in case of a flood-related emergency?
You know, when you talk to Hector Guerrero, the guy who created Turn Around, Don't Drown, he'll also be the first one to tell you that that advice is great, but it's not going to be sufficient. There are definitely times when people just can't get away. When water comes and starts pushing against your doors and your windows, it can be difficult to get out of your car. And so having some type of device to break the glass can be really life-saving.
Yeah.
They say to aim for the corner of your window. That's the weakest part of the glass. And then just start hammering away at it until you can shatter the glass. You know, when I interviewed Hector, he even said that it might be wise to even bring something that you could float on in your car. You might want to bring something like a life vest just to be on the safe side. In the region where I live, we also have a lot of kind of technological solutions. There are websites you can visit while the rain is coming down, and it will say in real time, here's a place you can't cross. Here's a place you can't cross. This is the kind of like, you know, situational awareness, I guess, to use a kind of public safety term, that becomes super important when you're in the middle of a flood.
Okay. So you talked about preparing before you go out onto the road by potentially checking these maps. Is there anything else that a listener can do to try to make it from point A to point B as safely as possible if there's just like somewhere that they really have to get?
So number one is just to try to get a sense of whether to stay put or not. Try to pay attention to public safety announcements about that, because those are things that public safety officials should be monitoring and advising on. Number two, if you do get caught and you realize you're in your vehicle and it's at risk of getting swept away, you're really going to have to try to get out and seek high ground. And that actually was well illustrated in that little clip that you played from that TV station. It's dangerous. It's terrifying. But really, getting to high ground is the name of the game if you're surrounded by flooding waters. And, you know, there are all these anecdotes and stories that we hear around here, people climbing trees, getting up on a hill or some kind of elevation just to try to escape the rushing water. And then calling for help, trying to get aid and waiting it out if you can.
So if listeners only remember a few things from this conversation, what are your top line takeaways for staying safe during floods?
I guess number one is, I think it just really pays to remember that more people die on the roads in their vehicles than in other places. It may be very frightening to see water approaching your property, but it's a good idea to try to listen to public safety announcements and get a sense of whether you really are going to be more secure on the roads. Number two, again, if you're in an area that's where you can expect flooding, it might be a good idea to keep some of these things in your car just to help you get out if need be. Number three, you know, they say, and I know this is hard, but try to stay calm. Don't drive into flooded roads. Turn around, don't drown.
Listen again.
So we know climate change is causing an increase in extreme weather events. How is climate change impacting flooding specifically?
We're getting more rainfall in shorter amounts of time, more dramatic rain events coming down. It's not that we're getting necessarily more rain through the year. It's that it's happening in a more compressed amount of time. And what that means is flooding. You talk to the experts and they say when you combine that with other trends like suburban sprawl, maybe kind of poorly planned developments and other things that can come and interfere with the way water flows on land, well, then you really have a recipe for more extreme flooding that we're seeing now and that we kind of expect into the future.
So you kind of touched on this in your last answer, but with some of the urban development, what other things make an area prone to flash floods?
Anything that you do to put down impervious cover will affect the way water flows on land. And impervious cover is kind of a technical term for asphalt, anything hard that does not absorb water. The second you do that, it could be a rooftop, it could be a parking lot, what you're doing is changing the natural flows of water as it goes over land. Typically, you know, water is going to go downhill and find a path of least resistance into a creek or stream and make its way out to the ocean. When you start putting in impervious cover, it starts messing with that. And suddenly you have more water sitting on land, and that can allow water to build up, and then you got a flood.
Got it. All right, so let's move into the actionable stuff now. You reported that the majority of flood deaths happen to people while they're in their vehicle, so our conversation is going to be focused on that scenario.
Yeah.
I'm from Texas, grew up in Houston, and on our highways, I would see all the time, and those programmable like LED road signs, the phrase, turn around, don't drown. It's pithy. It's easy to remember. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Turn around, don't drown is definitely like, you know, it's something you hear in other parts of the country, but maybe not as much as you hear it here. And in fact, it did start in Texas. It was the kind of brainchild of a guy named Hector Guerrero, who's used to be a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, who he grew up in Central Texas and, you know, the place they call Flash Flood Alley. And he just really thought that there should be a good way to communicate this concept. And so there you have it. Turn around, don't drown. The idea is that even if you see a little bit of water on the road, it might become dangerous. And it's just a much better policy to avoid it as long as you can, rather than try to risk it and go through.
Yeah. One of my aunts is actually an insurance agent, and one Christmas she gave me an emergency tool to keep in the car, and it has like a seatbelt cutter, a window smasher, a whistle. I think there might even be like a weak flashlight on it too.
Yeah.
So what kinds of things should people keep in their car in case of a flood-related emergency?
You know, when you talk to Hector Guerrero, the guy who created Turn Around, Don't Drown, he'll also be the first one to tell you that that advice is great, but it's not going to be sufficient. There are definitely times when people just can't get away. When water comes and starts pushing against your doors and your windows, it can be difficult to get out of your car. And so having some type of device to break the glass can be really life-saving.
Yeah.
They say to aim for the corner of your window. That's the weakest part of the glass. And then just start hammering away at it until you can shatter the glass. You know, when I interviewed Hector, he even said that it might be wise to even bring something that you could float on in your car. You might want to bring something like a life vest just to be on the safe side. In the region where I live, we also have a lot of kind of technological solutions. There are websites you can visit while the rain is coming down, and it will say in real time, here's a place you can't cross. Here's a place you can't cross. This is the kind of like, you know, situational awareness, I guess, to use a kind of public safety term, that becomes super important when you're in the middle of a flood.
Okay. So you talked about preparing before you go out onto the road by potentially checking these maps. Is there anything else that a listener can do to try to make it from point A to point B as safely as possible if there's just like somewhere that they really have to get?
So number one is just to try to get a sense of whether to stay put or not. Try to pay attention to public safety announcements about that, because those are things that public safety officials should be monitoring and advising on. Number two, if you do get caught and you realize you're in your vehicle and it's at risk of getting swept away, you're really going to have to try to get out and seek high ground. And that actually was well illustrated in that little clip that you played from that TV station. It's dangerous. It's terrifying. But really, getting to high ground is the name of the game if you're surrounded by flooding waters. And, you know, there are all these anecdotes and stories that we hear around here, people climbing trees, getting up on a hill or some kind of elevation just to try to escape the rushing water. And then calling for help, trying to get aid and waiting it out if you can.
So if listeners only remember a few things from this conversation, what are your top line takeaways for staying safe during floods?
I guess number one is, I think it just really pays to remember that more people die on the roads in their vehicles than in other places. It may be very frightening to see water approaching your property, but it's a good idea to try to listen to public safety announcements and get a sense of whether you really are going to be more secure on the roads. Number two, again, if you're in an area that's where you can expect flooding, it might be a good idea to keep some of these things in your car just to help you get out if need be. Number three, you know, they say, and I know this is hard, but try to stay calm. Don't drive into flooded roads. Turn around, don't drown.
This is the end of task 3 and the end of the listening comprehension test.